Sorry I got to him so late, but Dr. John Jackson patient with me this morning from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. John, I hope you're well, buddy.
Doing fine. Good morning, Tom.
You know, people really, really, really like to argue, well, not like it, but they do it a lot. They don't like it. I'm not sure why they do it as much as they do. Argue about politics, but you can't argue about this, John. The Democrats are in control in the state of Illinois. There's no argument about that. They've got the Capitol building. They've got the Capitol office. They've got the legislature at even bigger margins. There's no argument about who's control in Illinois, John.
Well, that's true. Of course, nationally, there was the much anticipated red wave, and it didn't turn out. And so there was no red wave nationally. You could say there was a small blue wave in Illinois, or a continuing tide coming in. And the exception would be southern Illinois and parts of central Illinois, where there really was a red wave.
And you're one of the first people that admitted it. I mean, at this point, people hadn't talked about this very much because I'd kind of been to me as anecdotal, where people saying, well, this incredibly low voter turnout, not at my polling place, the busiest I'd ever seen it. Not to mention the fact it was a midterm, no presidential election. It was busy.
Yeah, turnout was really pretty good for a midterm election. And in lots of places, it was better than good. And I don't think you can attribute it to turnout particularly.
All right. Now, so the governor wins. I looked, I think 13, 14 counties. My eyes started to blur a little bit, but somewhere in that area. But here's something you and I both know. The governor knows he can't just as a governor govern 13 or 14 counties. He has the entire state to be responsible for. And that to me seems like a task. When you've seen the map, you understand what I'm saying? I mean, you don't win all these places, but on the other hand, you still have to be the governor for all those places.
Well, I think he's generally understood that. He's been in southern Illinois a lot. He was up in Christopher doing a meeting. He did the Wren Lake stopover. He was in Franklin County two or three times. He was down in Cobden once, been to Carbondale a bunch, and been to Marion fairly often. And I think he also knew that probabilities of winning those areas were not great. And yet I think he's tried to reach out and to show up. And we've gotten lots of benefits from that, going up way back to the casino and the new development over there in Williamson County and the port facility in Alexander County, and certainly higher education, Logan and Carbondale SIU have benefited from stable budgets, and he showed up at both places fairly often.
How hard is that for a person to be able to do that? Do you have any idea about that, John? It's an awkward question, but I try to understand that more. And here's why. I was privileged to be part of a conversation between a governor and a state representative. And the subject of a bridge had come up, a bridge in southern Illinois that was considered dangerous in rural southern Illinois. And for the and I think I've told you this story before. And so when the school bus went across it, they got the kids off the bus. Yeah. They drove the bus across the bridge. Then they walked the kids across the bridge hand in hand. Summer, there's no rails on there. The state representative's asking for money from the then governor. And he says, that county, you mean the one that didn't vote for me? Next.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it, and it's not the professional way. I think the professionals really have a knack for putting most of that aside, and they have a knack for just wanting to be out among real people and to get real feedback. Paul Simon was like that, and Glenn Pichard was like that, and Kenny Gray was like that. So I think we've had a tradition of people in southern Illinois that understood that. And I think local officials have come to recognize that you have to not get in those fits of political peeve when it comes to things like, what are you going to do with Cairo, which, of course, Senator Dale Fowler has taken a lead on. And he's had a partner to negotiate with in the governor's office.
Now, it's interesting because elected officials, when I have spoke to them, have said things like this. You know, we see a very progressive agenda building in Springfield. And before, Mike Madigan had a way of moderating these more progressive elements in the state of Illinois, in the state legislature. It was almost like I've heard a lament for Mike Madigan's political abilities when it comes to keeping balance in Illinois.
Yeah, and of course the whole hassle over Safety Act is a good case in point. And there, I think it probably got out of hand a bit in the sense that Democrats exercised their supermajority and kind of rammed that thing through, although they would contend that they did some homework beforehand. But what I think is important to note about that is they went back now and went through all of those complaints and worked with state's attorneys especially and made some fairly significant changes in the new follow-on bill. And that's not unusual for a big, complicated piece of legislation like that. And I think the sponsors of the bill accepted that it was a better bill in the second iteration as a result of taking some of that input seriously. And that's simply the way the legislative process is supposed to work.
All right. Now, here's the interesting thing about this, and I picked up on this in your tone. Even now, I'm looking at a message right now. It came in on the American Monument text line. It says, now our local elected officials get called rhinos and get lost in primaries if they dare walk across the aisle to work with other people. It's very disappointing. You know, because here's an interesting thing, because you vote for somebody because you want them to do something. Okay. All right. Well, they're a Republican and a super minority. And then you get mad at them because they can't get anything done. What happens after that? We've seen the effect and then the effect. What is the outcome of this when you say, okay, my elected officials, they aren't getting things done, the things I want done, and so I want to get rid of them now. I mean, there's a second order of effect in whether you're the winner or the one that's behind the eight ball, as Republicans are in Southern Illinois.
Well, I think that's true in some elected officials' cases. Those who run to gratify ego and to participate in political theater, and I would cite Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia as my example, or others that you can pick out, maybe some of the squad in that other side of the House. But they have to go there and get serious about making policy and doing the mundane work of working up a budget and passing a budget, or they don't amount to anything in the policy-making process, in the bringing home the bacon process. And we haven't really had a lot of that sort of show horse behavior in Illinois and in Southern Illinois. We've seen it nationally way too much, but those aren't people that are there for serious public policy making. They're just there for the political theater and for being on television a lot.
You know, one thing about Illinois, and some people will still argue a point with you, but when you consider how long we went without a budget, Illinois is more fiscally sound. Now, some others would say, but it's come at an incredibly high price. I was reading an article. In fact, I've got a portion of it here from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy and the Tax Foundation, showing that Illinois' high sales tax on tobacco, that residents have now begun smuggling in the product from other states. I'm not surprised. But, you know, the cost of it, and the cost that we're talking about, is making Illinois financially stable and getting it out of the veritable basement of ratings when it comes to a great many things. And so Illinois is more fiscally sound, but at a high price. And in some ways, I think I was surprised that I didn't see more recognition of that in the last election.
Well, I think the fact is the budget is way better off than it was at the end of the rounder years. We didn't even have a budget for 2 years. The universities, community colleges, education suffered, social services suffered. State government numbers were hollowed out, and delivery, like at DOC level, for example, we closed state parks, and we need to remember all of that. since then, the legislature and the governor have been serious about passing real budgets with real numbers. And I would argue the point about at a high price, I don't see a lot of people have felt a great deal of pain over, for example, the income tax went back to 4.95, or I guess it's where we wound up. And our income taxes are not out of line with those around us. Now, cigarette taxes, that has a secondary objective, which is try to get people to stop smoking, of course, and especially young people. But nevertheless, we've had more money coming in than anybody expected, including COGFA, who makes those predictions. And as a result, we were able to sit down and get that agreed bill that came out just a couple of weeks ago, where they dealt with the unemployment insurance problem. And again, we used to use those agreed bills, and everybody got around the table, unions and management, and they worked it out, and nobody really felt a great deal of pain over it. So I think in the macro sense, Illinois financially is in way better shape than we were, and the New York bond houses have recognized that, raised our credit ratings three times.
But we're still the lowest in all categories and by significant margins.
Well, I know, yes, we are still low, but we're way better than we were, and we're not at junk bond status. And the place is really basically on the budget in a position that we haven't been in generations, actually.
You know, but here's the thing, John. You say that, you know, these taxes weren't that significant. I know people who are leaving the state, and they're moving because of money. We know businesses that are closing because they can't afford to do business in the state. And this car company, Salvanti or whatever it was, they're closing the Illinois plant, but they're investing $2.5 billion in the Indiana plant in Kokomo, saying we can't afford this, but we are doing this over there. I mean, for myself, I see it on a regular basis, and many times it's a mortgage payment, it's the price of food, it's media common. I know some of this goes across many borders, but many people I talk to rail about how much they're paying in one tax or another, or fees, or unemployment insurance, the highest in the country, or some among the highest in the country. Business owners are saying, I can't keep doing this.
Well, on balance, as you probably remember, the early report on movement in versus movement out was that we were going to be slightly below in the 2020 census, but it turned out we were actually above when they ran the next one, and we came in at 13 million plus, which is the first time we've ever broken 13 million. So, yeah, there's movement in and movement out, and certainly anecdotally, you know, people who move because they got mad about taxes or government in Illinois and so forth. But on balance, that ignores the fact that an awful lot of people graduate Midwestern universities and lots of other good universities and want to move to Chicago, and that's where the jobs are in their areas. And on balance, the macro picture is not nearly as dark as I think we in Southern Illinois tend to look at it, because our economic situation here is a good deal more difficult than that.
But, you know, the Treasury Department sent $1.8 billion to state government, $2.7 billion for metropolitans, $1.9 billion for Chicago, $2.5 billion for counties, and $742 million for smaller cities. Illinois saw a lot of federal dollars come into this state.
Yeah, and the next budget, I think wisely, FY23, as I understand it, they took the loss of that federal funding completely into account and made the projections on very conservative assessments. And the first iteration was at the end of the first quarter, and there was actually more income than COGFA had expected. So basically, I think they figured that in. And I think the legislature has been really serious about not creating new sources of demand on the state government budget, and instead concentrated on shoring up what we're already doing.
I'm running out of time, and I wanted to spend more time on this, but we'll just hit this real quick before I let you go.
Okay.
What do you see happening in D.C., the Democrats in control of the Senate and, of course, the presidential office and the House, control now the Republicans? What do you see in 2023? Gridlock? Do you see investigations galore? What's your crystal ball telling you about 2023 in D.C.?
Well, yes, to investigations galore. The House is going to go crazy on opening all kinds of investigations, starting with Hunter Biden and a whole bunch of other stuff. But on gridlock, that's the $64,000 question, and there are two scenarios. One is, I think the Congress should have learned from this last election that they want things to get done. People voted for candidates who wanted things to get done and not drag the country down with gridlock. And so they're going to need to search for compromise areas between the House and Senate and within the House to get anything done. And the big acid test, Tom, watch out for this, is, do they get serious about raising the national debt limit or not? And that's coming right on us, December, whatever the
Friday.
Yeah, Friday. It's looming. And that's the first test, because we can't default. We've been down that road both in Clinton era and in the Obama era. It threatens the full faith and credit of the United States. It would bring on a disastrous recession, and it's all political theater. We shouldn't even have a debt limit because it's nonsense, but it allows both parties to do political posturing. So let's see if we can get that done without shutting down the government, cutting off payments to Medicare and Medicaid, the troops in the field, and Social Security, and closing the Washington Monument as they did in 95, for example. So watch out for that.
It's interesting, when I was reading on this subject last night, negotiations around a $1.5 trillion authorization on spending. But according to insiders, they're negotiating between Democrat and Republicans, and at $1.5 trillion, they're still $26 billion apart, $26 billion apart. Dr. John Jackson, Paul Simon, Public Policy Institute. John, it's always fun to talk to you. I really enjoy listening to you this morning, as always. And Merry Christmas and a great 2023 to you and yours, John.